Reading 4. Then folks began to ask, where was that woman? And they found out by comparing notes that nobody had seen her since the man went away. But three or four women remembered that she had told them that she thought of taking the child and going to Boston to visit her folks. So when they hadn't seen her around and the house shut, they jumped to the conclusion that that was where she was. They were the neighbors that lived right around her, but they didn't have much to do with her, and she'd gone out of her way to tell them about her Boston plan, and they didn't make much reply when she did. Well, there was this house shut up, and the man and woman missing, and the child. Then, all of a sudden, one of the women that lived the nearest remembered something. She remembered that she had walked up three nights running, thinking she heard a child crying somewhere. And once, she waked up her husband. But he said it must be the Bisbee's little girl, and she thought it must be. The child wasn't well and was always crying. It used to have colic spells, especially at night. So she didn't think any more about it, until this came up. Then all of a sudden, she did think of it. She told what she had heard. And finally, folks began to think they had better enter that house and see if there was anything wrong. Well, they did enter it. And they found that child dead, locked in one of the rooms. Mrs. Dennison and Mrs. Bird never used that room. It was a back bedroom on the second floor. Yes, they found that poor child there, starved to death, and frozen. Though they weren't sure she had frozen to death, for she was in bed with clothes enough to keep her pretty warm when she was alive. But she had been there a week, and she was nothing but skin and bone. It looked as if the mother had locked her into the house when she went away and told her not to make any noise for fear the neighbors would hear her and find out that she herself had gone. Mrs. Dennison said she couldn't really believe that the woman had meant to have her own child starve to death. Probably she thought the little thing would raise somebody, or folks would try to get in the house and find her. Well, whatever she thought, there the child was, dead. But that wasn't all. The father came home right in the midst of it. The child was just buried, and he was beside himself. And he went on the track of his wife, and he found her, and he shot her dead. It was in all the papers at the time. Then he disappeared. Nothing had been seen of him since Mrs. Dennison said that she thought he had either made away with himself or got out of the country. Nobody knew, but they did know there was something wrong with the house. I knew folks acted queer when they asked me how I liked it when we first came here, says Mrs. Dennison. But I never dreamed why till we saw the child that night. I never heard anything like it in my life, said Mrs. Emerson, staring at the other woman with awe-struck eyes. I thought you'd say so, said Mrs. Meserve. You don't wonder that I ain't disposed to speak light when I hear there is anything queer about a house, do you? No, I don't, after that, Mrs. Emerson said. But that ain't all, said Mrs. Meserve. Did you see it again? Mrs. Emerson asked. Yes, I saw it a number of times, before the last time. It was lucky I wasn't nervous, or I never could have stayed there, much as I liked the place, and much as I thought of those two women. They were beautiful women, and no mistake. I loved those women. I hope Mrs. Dennison will come and see me sometime. Well, I stayed, and I never knew when I'd see that child. I got so I was very careful to bring everything of mine upstairs and not leave any little thing in my room that needed doing, for fear she would come lugging up my coat or hat or gloves, or I'd find things done when there'd been no live being in the room to do them. I can't tell you how I dreaded seeing her. And worse than the seeing her was the hearing her say, "I can't find my mother." It was enough to make your blood run cold. I never heard a living child cry for its mother that was anything so pitiful as that dead one. It was enough to break your heart. She used to come and say that to Mrs. Bird oftener than to anyone else. Once I heard Mrs. Bird say she wondered if it was possible that the poor little thing couldn't really find her mother in the other world. She had been such a wicked woman. But Mrs. Dennison told her she didn't think she ought to speak so, nor even think so. And Mrs. Bird said she wouldn't wonder if she was right. Mrs. Bird was always very easy to put in the wrong. She was a good woman, and one that couldn't do things enough for other folks. It seemed as if that was what she lived on. I don't think she was ever so scared by that poor little ghost as much as she pitied it, and she was most heartbroken because she couldn't do anything for it as she could have done for a live child. It seems to me sometimes as if I should die if I can't get that awful little white robe off that child and get her in some clothes and feed her and stop her looking for her mother, I heard her say once, and she was in earnest. She cried when she said it. That wasn't long before she died. Now I am coming to the strangest part of it all. Mrs. Bird died very sudden. One morning, it was Saturday and there wasn't any school, I went downstairs to breakfast, and Mrs. Bird wasn't there. There was nobody but Mrs. Dennison. She was pouring out the coffee when I came in. "Why, where's Mrs. Bird?" says I. "Abby ain't feeling very well this morning," says she. "There isn't much the matter, I guess, but she didn't sleep very well, and her head aches, and she's sort of chilly. And I told her I thought she'd better stay in bed till the house gets warm." It was a very cold morning. "Maybe she's got cold," says I. "Yes, I guess she has," says Mrs. Dennison. "I guess she's got cold. She'll be up before long. Abby ain't one to stay in bed a minute longer than she can help." Well, we went on eating our breakfast, and all at once, a shadow flickered across one wall of the room and over the ceiling, the way a shadow will sometimes when somebody passes the window outside. Mrs. Dennison and I both looked up, then out of the window. Then Mrs. Dennison, she gives a scream. "Why, Abby's crazy," says she. "There she is out this bitter cold morning and... She didn't finish. But she meant the child. For we were both looking out, and we saw, as plain as we ever saw anything in our lives, Mrs. Abby Bird walking off over the white snow path with that child holding fast to her hand, nestling close to her as if she had found her own mother. "She's dead," says Mrs. Dennison, clutching hold of me hard. "She's dead. My sister is dead." She was. We hurried upstairs as fast as we could go, and she was dead in her bed, and smiling, as if she was dreaming. And one arm and hand was stretched out as if something had hold of it, and it couldn't be straightened even at the last. It lay out over her casket at the funeral. Was the child ever seen again? asked Mrs. Emerson in a shaking voice. "No," replied Mrs. Meserve. "That child was never seen again after she went out of the yard with Mrs. Bird."